That video of a South Carolina school officer throwing a young student across a room after she reportedly refused to turn over her cell phone has infuriated both people who feel she shouldn't have been arrested and those who think the officer shouldn't have been fired. But it's also raised the question, what's the alternative? Last year, the Obama administration urged schools to move away from policies like suspensions because they often discriminate based on race, and because with the addition of school resource officers, they often send kids to jail instead of the principal's office. Instead, schools were encouraged to take up restorative justice. What does that look like? Karen Yunker is a sixth grade math teacher at Davidson Middle School in San Rafael, California. She uses restorative practice and teaches others how to. So, Karen, say you have a student who will not turn over her cell phone. What would you have done?
I would have given her some space about that because not turning over her cell phone isn't, you know, something that puts anybody at threat or causes any harm to anyone. So I probably would have given her some space and checked in with her when we had some time alone to see what was going on with her.
Well, you know that's going to enrage some people who say, well, wait a second, using a cell phone in class, texting is disruptive to other kids. And by the way, I can't imagine what it's like to be a teacher now with all these devices. But do what you're told.
Oh, I agree with some of that. But I also would like us to take a look at developmental stages. Students will react, especially when they're scared or afraid, and especially if they come from backgrounds where they already come to school with trauma or shame or emotional injuries. It makes perfect sense to me that a student would occasionally fight, flee, or freeze in the presence of demanding authority.
Fight, flee, or freeze. We've heard this put other ways, that there are students who want to do four things, according to another teacher blog. They want to get your attention. They want to have power over you. They want to get revenge. You know, they're angry about something. They're afraid of failing.
That's right. We train teachers to recognize shame responses and to recognize trauma responses, and rather than use sort of traditional discipline measures with those instances, to actually do some investigation or exploration about, you know, what's going on for the child. I guess what we do is we really just recognize that kids react and that it's authority figures. We should be trained to respond rather than reacting to those reactions.
Well, for instance, a child who just doesn't listen to direction, which is enraging. I mean, anyone who's dealt with teenagers knows if their attitude is leave me alone, there might be something else going on.
That's right. What we are finding is that one of the least productive things that we do when kids are upset is that we use force or exclusionary discipline. Suspend them or send them away from the school, or even just send them out into the hall or to an in-school suspension.
Well, but that's traditionally what's happened. A lot of people, because of this video, have become aware, if they weren't before, about the notion that schools are calling in police officers. And they've said that that's schools abdicating what used to be the teacher's job. You get somebody to the principal's office. That shame has been a good old-fashioned part of discipline.
Well, there are two kinds of shame. There's stigmatizing shame, where we teach kids that they're bad and wrong, and then some of them internalize that. And then there's reintegrative shame, where we use the power of the community, the power of peer pressure, the power of the fact that people are wired to care what people think about them. So we use a reintegrative shame here at Davidson Middle School to reduce suspensions, to reduce disciplinary actions, and to de-escalate conflicts.
What do you mean by that, reintegrative?
A reintegrative shame is where the student learns that the community cares about them, and that because the child cares that the community cares, they will often do the right thing. When we build community with students, when school resource officers build community with students, we just don't have as many discipline problems. And then when things go wrong, there's a relationship that can be repaired. At our school, we every Thursday for 20 minutes, all students and all staff are in community building circles together, talking about things that matter to them and that are of interest and importance to them. And so then when things go wrong and kids break their relationships, or they don't follow the rules, or they are defiant, then there already have been relationships built that can be restored. We have a fabulously productive suspension diversion program where we use student panels. So instead of the offending student having a conversation with all the grown-ups about it only, the student has a conversation with their classmates about what's going on also. They tell the truth about the impact on the disruptive behavior. Often students don't even understand how their actions affect other people. And it's not because they're bad, it's just because developmentally they actually don't understand. So when they have an opportunity to hear how their actions affect other people, they will often change their behavior.
Well, and your school has more than 1,100 students, 62% eligible for free lunch. So they come from homes where maybe they're not getting some of this guidance, with parents struggling to work.
Exactly.
You say 5 or 6 years ago, when the school had 830 students, there were 375 suspensions. And then the 2014-15 school year with more students, 1,100, only 40 suspensions. But in Santa Ana, California, 65% of educators said in a teachers union survey that the restorative strategy wasn't working. In Chicago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel also promoting restorative practices, but a teacher there complained that this has led to lawless classrooms. There are people who say it just doesn't work. You might have fewer suspensions, but on the other hand, it's because kids are running around wild.
My experience is that where it fails, where restorative practices seems like it's failing, it's because people skip over the community building part. Where we start with community building circles, restorative practices really work.
Well, we've been talking anecdotally to teachers that we know in some school districts where they have a lot of disciplinary problems with kids. They talk about if there's one child that's acting out and they can't get the child to leave the class, then they have the whole class get up and leave. How else are teachers having to deal? I mean, I keep going back to someone who won't leave the classroom or give up their phone. You've already said you'd give them some space and say, okay, let's talk about it later. You know, how else are teachers having to handle this?
Like, for that, I probably wouldn't have called the front office. I probably would have had the student go next door to one of my colleagues' rooms and write a reflection. We have these restorative reflection forms, and have her fill that out.
A reflection form? What's that?
It's a form that has the restorative questions on it, like what happened, what are you thinking about, who's been affected by this, like if you had a second chance, what might you do differently? What do we need to know about how your day is going that might make a difference in this instance?
And what about you as a teacher? Parents know what it feels like when they have a teenager just not listen to them. How do you not take it personally?
Yeah, that is a big deal about how to not take it personally. I have to constantly remind myself that they're 12 years old or 13 years old. I understand that developmentally their brains are just sometimes not able to deal with life or situations the way I would want them to.
Comment on another video that's making the rounds. It's reminding us how heroic some teachers are. This is from Florin High School in Sacramento. A principal trying to break up a fight in the cafeteria. Fights in cafeterias are as old as time. Mm-hmm. And he got body slammed. I mean, literally, you will have the video at hearnow.org. A student literally threw him. Here's some of what that sounds like.
It's horrifying.
What do you do?
Well, you know, I think we deal with these inflamed instances with as much consciousness and thought and community input as we can. But really, Robin, the place where restorative practices begins and school discipline begins is in community building. Our campus supervisors know our students. The students know the campus supervisors care about them, and they expect to be treated respectfully.
So your school does have access to a uniformed resource officer who has a gun, who can be called. Watching that brawl, it's horrendous. It's just traumatic and awful. Do you ever say give and feel you have to call the officer?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, when there's a threat to anyone's safety or security, then there is time for that. There's time for detention. There's time for suspension. All of that has its place. The problem is it's just so overused, and it doesn't recognize the developmental stage that our students are in, and the fact that some of them come from very traumatizing families and life situations where they are on edge. The cortisol levels are up all the time, and it's not, frankly, surprising that they fight.
Karen Yunker, sixth grade math teacher who uses restorative practices in her class at the Davidson Middle School in San Rafael, California. Karen, thanks so much.
You are welcome. It's been my pleasure.